Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm tired. I'm tired and I'm stressed and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of all of the things and I keep waiting for that proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. Like, I keep wondering when the next thing happens, when something else tough shows up for me, when am I going to break? And I know a lot of us are feeling like that right now, which is why today's podcast episode could not come at a better time. We're talking about resilience with Komal Minhas, and I really like her approach to resilience. The fact that we're all here, that we've made it this far, is something that she wants us to celebrate. Like, we're stronger than we think. And I also really love her approach because it's all about starting where you are, right? It's not, you know, a prescribed version of resilience. It's understanding and taking a brain-based approach. She has a degree in positive psychology, and it's really about taking those learnings and doing it in a way that works for you. So I needed this interview. I'm sure you would benefit from it as well. And please, it's really about time that we welcome Komal to the podcast. Komal, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Likewise. Now, we're talking today about resilience, which I feel is a bit of a hot topic. I think everyone, we're recording this, it's a year into the pandemic. We're all being really tested, but I don't think we really know what resilience really means and how to build it. So let's start with, what is resilience?
So if we look up the definition of resilience, it is how quickly we can bounce back from difficulty, or how quickly something can bounce back. Even when we think of it, I have a Slinky here on my desk, and it's how quickly can this bounce, or is it compressed, or is it overextended? How fragile or how resilient are we, or are the objects like the Slinky? And so resilience for me, though, is, especially from a human perspective, a look at how resilient is your community? How resilient is your wellness practices? How resilient is your relationship to work? How resilient is your relationship to yourself, your culture, and your identity? How resilient is your belief in yourself? And so there's so many different facets to being resilient that we forget about. And sometimes we can undermine our own resilience by not even acknowledging it. Like, there is not a human being on this planet who is not resilient, having lived through a global pandemic for a year, regardless of circumstance and background. We are all so strong. We have come through so much. And we deserve the opportunity to celebrate our resilience, but also to fill our cup enough that we can remain resilient over the long term.
I think that's such a great point, because so often when we get to that point when we're feeling worn down, we don't see our own resilience. We don't see our own value and worth, and we just get hard on ourselves. And so how can we remind ourselves that, in fact, we are strong? I think it's a mindset piece, right? Like, we are strong. We are moving through the world right now, and it's a hard world to move through. What are some ways that we can acknowledge or bring ourselves back into that strength?
It sounds really simple, but just celebrating what we have overcome. Mm. So when I do keynotes, and especially on Zoom or online these days, I always open with the same question. What is something you're proud of yourself for having overcome this last year? And so I ask that to you, the audience. What is something you're proud of yourself for having overcome? And this can range from folks saying burnout, to changing jobs, to pivoting careers, to grieving and overcoming and reconciling the loss of a loved one. to leaving a partnership because regular life issues have continued even during a global pandemic. It is just magnified and it is just that much more difficult for us to move through things right now. Mm-hmm. And so just reminding yourself, making a list of the things you've persevered through, and then celebrating those things and giving yourself a moment to reflect and honor and respect those things. I've received DMs from folks who share that until they heard that what they had overcome makes them resilient, they didn't realize they were resilient. They just thought they survived. But survival goes hand in hand with resilience. And that's what we often forget, is that the things you've overcome do in fact make you resilient, do in fact make you someone who can persevere, who can overcome. Those people that you admire externally for their hero's journey, you are one of those people. And we often just don't give ourselves credit or remember that. So writing it down is a great way, reflecting on it. And then saying it aloud to someone you trust, and hearing aloud the things that you've overcome and persevered through, and being able to like be in conversation with someone you trust about those things and having them also celebrate you and you celebrate them in the same way. So these are two ways that you can remind yourself of your strength and resilience.
That piece around telling someone else, I think, is so powerful. So often I find, and I've heard other people say this, I can't take credit for it, that we're terrible friends to ourselves. So how do we surround ourselves with really good friends and be a really good friend, right? We would never say to someone we care about some of the things we, some of the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And so having someone look you in the eye, even if it's on Zoom, and tell you those things, someone you know and you trust, I think, is really important all the time. Like we need to celebrate, as you said, and really acknowledge our own strengths.
And it's, you know, we often say celebrate your birthday, celebrate the promotion, celebrate the good things. Mm. How often do we encourage each other to celebrate those difficult things? But it's equally as important, if not more important, because those easy things can, or not those easy things, but the positive things, we then expect only positivity to be celebrated when in fact, like that tenacity, that perseverance, that resilience is really what makes those positive moments matter that much more. So let's get in the habit of celebrating both.
Yeah. And I think that goes back, that takes us back to that analogy of the slinky, or I've heard elastic, which is, and we always, you know, everyone sounds super cliche, but you know, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. It's this idea of the movement between those spaces that is the strength, not living in one of those, you know, not living as the slinky stretched out or always compact. It's the movement between them that makes all of it more meaningful. So I think that's a really powerful way to look at life and resiliency and how we can celebrate both.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's that in between that is really where life happens.
Mm.
And it's at those extremes where we don't often get to experience life because we're so overwhelmed or so stressed that presence isn't even possible when we're at those extremes.
Mm-hmm. So how do we build these muscles, right? Because this, we're all going to go through that, right? This is life. This is a reality. Some of us, obviously, and I would feel remiss not to mention that, you know, obviously there are systemic issues that make those extremes more real for people, not more real, but more, just more extreme, I guess. But we all go through ups and downs. We all get pulled and contracted. How do we build those muscles so that we don't reach burnout? We don't reach a breaking point.
I would offer that it's, we likely will, even with, you know, the best laid intentions and plans, it happens. And that giving ourselves grace when we do burn out or when we do get overwhelmed or when we do hit an extreme, giving ourselves grace is so critical. But it is, you know, the resilient aspect of that is how what systems do you have in your life to help you get back to baseline? And yes, the how quickly can you help yourself get back to baseline? So for example, for myself, I hit a heavy burnout at the end of 2020. I did my cardinal rule. I broke it, of overworking and working, you know, 12, 14 hour days consistently to the point where I burnt out. But I had made a deal with myself that I knew that that was a season of intense work, and that I would give myself reprieve and rest after. But what I didn't realize is that I would need more time than I thought I would. I thought 2 or 3 weeks was enough. But for anyone who's experienced burnout, you know that that is the bare minimum. And so it took me an additional couple of weeks, and I had to shift things in how I run my business so that systems are in place so that I can have more time in my day-to-day to take care of myself. So when we think of building resilience in our day-to-day, it is how do we create space in between? So in between mothering, in between work, how do we fit in ourselves? And that often comes to systems around wellness. So what structures do you have in place so that you can move frequently throughout the week? Is it a personal trainer? Is it a friend you're accountable to who you call when you go on your walks? Pandemic-friendly activities that you can consistently schedule and hold yourself accountable to? Because that ability to move is so critical for the human body, even just in being able to sleep well at night. So many of us, we're just sitting in front of a computer, our brains get tired, but our bodies are still like, you need to use me, move the energy out of me. So it becomes this inertia loop in both sides. If we are overworking, we're stuck in the inertia loop of overwork. But then if we begin the positive habits in our lives around movement, then our sleep improves, then we might be hydrating more. So it's switching from which inertia loop we're wanting to jump into. But creating systems around our wellness practices every day is so important because it's going to make you better in your work life. Mm-hmm. So it's also about cultivating your identity and your wholeness outside of work. Because I read this tweet, a friend of mine told me about this tweet, and it said the pandemic has taken everything from us except work. Mm. And oh my goodness, did that hit home. And so how do we cultivate a wholeness in our identity outside of work when we are confined to our homes? This is the challenge. And if instead of feeling victimized by that, we can flip the switch and say, I'm going to rise to this challenge. And I'm going to make game nights with my friends online or with my family. I'm going to consistently move my body. I'm going to find pockets of joy. I am going to turn off my laptop at 6 o'clock. I'm going to set boundaries with work. We can almost gamify developing our wholeness outside of our productivity. And for me, that's a big aspect of resiliency that we need to talk about in our work addicted culture. Yes. Because we become fragile, we become rigid when we overwork and do not create that space for our spirit, for our bodies, for our minds to really rest and rejuvenate and bring us back to that in-between where we can have a little bit more flexibility in our overall well-being.
You just said so much. I want to deep dive into a couple things. And, you know, I always try and channel and hear what our listeners are probably thinking. And I know when I'm sure I've been in this situation, as many people I know, where life feels too much. There's so much going on that we become the last priority. So as much as we might intellectually know that we need to take care of ourselves, we need to move our bodies, we need to drink more water, we get, as you, and I think you mentioned it, the work addicted side of ourselves, we just get sucked in. And you mentioned it needs to become a habit. But I think starting that habit, as we know with any habit, starting a habit is really hard. And we're working against so much of our own mental barriers. So how can you talk a little bit about, first, why that's important, that it's not an either or, but that when we do those things, when we do take care of ourselves, when we move our bodies, when we build that resiliency, it actually allows us to do better at the work and actually have better outcomes. And then how do we start So basically, what's going on when we do that, when we prioritize that? And then how do we start to change our habits towards that? That's a lot of questions.
Yeah. And it's actually really recent for me, because when I fell off my habit train at last quarter last year, around September, October, it was like I wasn't meditating anymore, moving anymore, hydrating. There was no vitamins going in my body. Like, it was just sleep, rise, work, sleep, rise, work. We have to do those. Like, there are seasons where we have to sprint in that way. And so I'm not out here trying to be like that. That is fully, you know, curbable, especially when we're in a pandemic and people need to pivot their businesses and need to take care of their children and need to like homeschool their children essentially right now. There are seasons where that is required. When we have time for reprieve, if we can cultivate time for reprieve because we require it, because if we're burnt out, then we are no good to anybody. When we can create time to rebuild those habits. For me, it was, I went from doing all of the good things, like my six morning routine things, all everything, to nothing for a while. And then I was like, oh, how do I start again when my most recent memory is of having all of this working really well? Because we can shame ourselves out of restarting habits. It's like, I'm not where I was, so how am I supposed to start? You start with one thing at a time. And so for me, it became movement. I needed to get in touch with a personal trainer online, which it's so affordable now. It's amazing to see that you can do these one-on-one Zoom trainings or Zoom classes with fitness professionals online. Find someone I like, because across the research, what we learn about habit building or even positive psychology is community is just such a cornerstone for successfully building habits. Who's your accountability crew? Who are the people that you're engaging with when you're building your habits? And I love my trainer. And so when I show up twice a week for her, and when she's programming what I'm doing outside of our training sessions together, I'm going to take it seriously because I really enjoy our time together. And I really respect her as someone who's helping me improve my overall fitness. So for the first month, it was only movement. For the second month, it came to, for me, it was just tracking my intake on food. Mm-hmm. So I'm about 6 weeks into that being the second habit. And now the third is rebuilding my meditation and journaling practice. So, but before even starting the habit rebuilding, it comes back to your why when it comes to the motivators you have around rebuilding habits. And for a lot of us, it's we hit a wall where it's like, oh, the inertia of the bad habits gets to such a point where it's like, I don't feel good. I don't like my life. I don't like who I'm becoming. This doesn't feel like me. And when we hit that, and like sometimes we need to bottom out to that point. And I don't want to negate that process. If you're in that place where you're just like, I just got to go for it. I just got to be in all my bad habits. Let yourself bottom out. I genuinely believe there comes a point where we realize, and that happened for me, where we realize it's time for something to change. And if you feel like that point's not coming and you still, like there's a part of you that's like, I need to change, reach out to someone to help you stay accountable on whatever the small change it is that you're seeking to make. But the why behind our habit building and our wellness and our care for self needs to be strong enough to sustain us. And then second to that is, again, building your accountability community around the habits you are trying to rebuild. So I have a group thread with my cousins where we report back to each other on our wellness goals every week. And then my husband and I and our cousin who we live with, we have a whiteboard calendar where we are checking off every day when we've done our wellness goals, and we all have different ones. So a workout goes on there and tracking my food goes on there as my habits that I'm developing. And so when you do habit building and change in a community, and we don't talk about this enough, but it is a cornerstone to sustaining good habits around our wellness in the long term. And then when it comes to why these things and why these elements improve our productivity or improve our outcomes, it's because we can care about work again. When we're overwhelmed and burnt out, we don't care about work. In the nonprofit sector, I worked early in my career in the nonprofit sector. There's just such a burden on employees in the nonprofit sector to just be committed to the cause and be willing to take an L in the other parts of their lives when it comes to salary or overall wellness, because I'm working on a bigger cause. But a bigger cause can only take you so far. And if that is your motivator, then the rest of your life needs to be an anchor for you to continue that work forward. And if our workplaces aren't supporting that kind of a wholeness outside of work, then you build a cycle of burnout. You build a repetition of burnout for your employees, and then them in their own lives, that habit gets built. So it is that deeper motivator and the reason that we become more productive or just more happy when we have these other habits in place is because we have a life outside of our productivity, and it gives us the enthusiasm to care about our work again.
I always say, you know, work is second. And to your point earlier, right now, work is one of the only things, if we're lucky enough to still be working, it's one of the only things we have consistently from, you know, during this time, but it's still only work. And we might
back a little bit there, because for a lot of people, work is purpose. And I never want to negate that. And I never want to undermine that that's true. Yeah. What if we were to say they're on an equal footing?
And,
like, your life matters and your work matters.
Yeah.
And so how do we, instead of trying to like make one more important than the other, and in some instances they are, when I, you know, faced a neurological illness and got really ill, like, work didn't matter at that time.
Yeah.
But in this season, especially in the pandemic, where work also is a worthy distraction, a worthy purpose provider, a worthy time, you know, a worthy outcomes when it comes to just surviving right now financially, we got to value it, but we also got to understand that we're human beings.
Yeah, that's such a great perspective, and also really fitting with this idea of, you know, stretching and contracting, which is, there might be seasons where one takes more of a precedent, but they both coexist really, really meaningfully. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about your habit develop, or you're revisiting those wellness habits. And I'm really curious if there's a reason why you have the order that you have in terms of which habits you're taking on as you get more and more established into that.
I would say that it's about like it's personal priority. So movement for me, I had put my back out at the end of last year, which had led to my decrease in movement. And I just felt like at this age, if I'm not consistent even for a couple months, my joints, like my mom had arthritis or has arthritis and joint pain. So I know that weight training and strength training is just so important for my body to prevent deterioration in the future. So also I just like hurt. So I was like, my back hurts. I know that if I can find a trainer who is aware of physiotherapy, or who was formerly or is a physiotherapist, like, that's the perfect juncture for me. And what was preventing me from starting my movement practice was not having a trainer that I felt aligned with in my recovery needs. And so I did a deep dive, and I researched for like 2 or 3 days, creeped Instagram profiles, creeped websites to just be like, who has this intersection of mobility and physio work and strength training and conditioning and everything I'm looking for. And then I landed on the gym in Toronto that I've started working with online. And so that's why that was the first priority and the cornerstone. And I knew from there, fitness, because of the time of my workouts during my day, I can reverse engineer the morning routine I want from there. And again, like, I don't have children, so I don't have the same burdens that a lot of folks who might be listening do in terms of time constraints or supporting others in that way. So this worked really well for me and my reverse habit stacking that I was doing earlier this year. And I also knew for my business to function, I had to be at my best because we were doing a lot of overhauls and major pivots with our programming. And now I feel like we're in a good space, both as a company and me as a person. It's interesting how both improve when you focus on your well-being. And I've seen that firsthand. But the way that I prioritized was just personal connection to each aspect of it. So I knew with movement, I would choose to be more self-aware of what I was consuming coming out of the Christmas season of indulgence. And my family and were so committed to it too. So it really took on its own momentum at that point.
I literally could talk to you forever. I love this topic and I love your perspective. We don't have all the time in the world, but I do want to ask, because so often we hear people talk about morning routines, right? I can't remember all the terms I've heard, but there's like all these people who are, you know, morning routine is the key. I'm curious from your perspective, because you mentioned your morning routine, what is there truth behind that? Is there any reason why mornings seem so powerful in establishing these habits, or is it just because that's what people have grabbed onto?
There's research around like night owls and morning people and all of these different aspects of this. But what I know for sure is, and my morning is not the morning, because my peak work hours or my peak like life hours are 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. So I'm here to normalize those of us who are night owls to like build that rhythm. And again, when I have children in the future, that'll probably change, or I'll be on the night shift in the early years and my husband will do like the morning with that. Who even knows?
Yeah.
But all this to say, like, I did a keynote recently, and when I shared this, like, there was a couple of people in the audience who were just like, thank you for normalizing this. Like, I will not be waking up at 5 a.m. and doing a morning routine like that. I will not be doing morning pages at 6 a.m. because I would just fall asleep. Like, this is not what I'm talking about. It's whatever your rising schedule is. What do you need to set up your day for to succeed and to feel good? And what I've shifted during the pandemic, because pre-pandemic, I was very regimented. All of the checks need to happen for different things. And now it's like, I have actually, someone on my team gave me this language, and it was fixed habits and variable habits. Mm. And so when I look at my morning routine, the non-negotiables are, she actually has a really lovely verbiage for this. It's like, all together, head to toe. And it's like, you know, the things you don't need to think about showering, brushing your teeth, like doing all those daily necessities. But then the variable are, is it meditation today? Am I moving today? Am I journaling today? Am I reading in the morning today? And then picking one and having that be my morning routine, so that at least I know I've taken 5 to 10 minutes for me, even 3 minutes, sometimes 1 minute. Closing my eyes and being mindful, I feel like a win, like that's a big win for me. So it's not as rigid for me as I know a lot of folks say, like they're five to thrive mornings and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And my mornings are just when I wake up and I set myself up for success. But I will say something I've changed that has been really helpful for me is literally in the moments when I wake up, whether it's alarm clock, husband waking me up, whatever it is, I keep my eyes closed for an additional 10 seconds. I just do a check-in with where my mind is before I've even opened my eyes. And I set an intention for the day. I think about a little bit of my to-do list, and then I open my eyes. And it has just been such a beautiful pause, even on the days when I don't have time to pick one of my five variable habits. And it's something that I can tactically actually do every day. So yes, I'm here to demystify the night owl life and be a proponent for whatever your sleep schedule is. Let that be your sleep schedule. And then your morning routine is really your rising routine. What works for you to get yourself moving to have a good, effective day?
That is fantastic. And I sit here opposite from you. I am a morning person through and through. My eyes pop open at 5:30. So
I love that for you.
I know. But what my big takeaway from our conversation, besides sort of the more technical pieces around building that resiliency, is starting where you are and meeting yourself and in that place, right? Whether figuring out what your rising time is, figuring out what your non-negotiables are that work with you and your priorities in life right now. And I think that is so important, because so often we hear people and they're just telling you what works for them, as opposed to helping you figure out what works for you. And I really appreciate that about your approach. So thank you.
No, thank you. And I'll say that I think a lot of the anxiety we feel is because we're trying to fit into other people's boxes, when it's like, why don't we just observe what other people have done and then build our own box for ourselves?
Excellent. Where can our listeners learn more about you and connect with you and the incredible work that you're doing?
Head over to my Instagram at Komal Minhas, KOMALMINHAS. That's the best place to dive into my DMs. I love voice noting and replying to folks and just chatting about resiliency and all of the things. So head on over there or check out Komal.com. I have a new resiliency program that is launching in May that I hope I will see you in class for.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast. And of course, to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.